This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, thanks for tuning in.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome to another amazing episode of Books Uncovered.
We've got a real
another amazing episode.
Another amazing one. But it is, because we've got an exciting theme this time.
We did.
About the weather. So books to do with the weather. Because, yeah, we've been having such crazy weather. I mean, I feel like every time it's spring, it's a surprise. And then I started thinking about the etymology of spring and how it springs upon you.
Damn.
Just because it's been like hailing and then you're like, oh, it's actually sunny and hot. And yeah. But plants are loving it, obviously.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the weather to be
consistent,
which is not going to happen in Dunedin, but you know.
Or ever.
Yeah. ever again. When you said this is an idea for the topic, I was like, oh. I had lots of good ideas and I was like, they're already books I've talked about on the show. But then I found some other ones. So what I read this week actually is the new Ian McEwan novel, which you have brought for the library, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
I just saw that in your stack. Yeah. So it's called What We Can Know, and this is his 18th novel and the first of his I've read. I found Ian McEwan to be one of those people that is recommended a lot to me, like especially Atonement and On Chesil Beach. And they sound really interesting, but they're just, you know, when you get told a lot to read something and then you're like, I'm not going to read it.
He's kind of a blockbuster type
author,
isn't he? I read Enduring Love.
What's that one about?
It sort of starts off with this guy and he's in a park and he sees a hot air balloon escaping and there's a child on it. And so it starts off with this drama and then it kind of peters out a bit.
Okay.
But I thought the name of this book, what is it?
What We Can Know.
What We Can Know is quite an odd title for a book.
Yeah. It's an interesting novel. I think this is quite different from his other books. I say that not having read any of them, but it's like a climate, what people call now cli-fi.
Cli-fi?
Yeah, climate fiction is now its own genre since there's so many like dystopian novels coming out about our future. Fun. But yeah, I did enjoy this. I didn't love it, but I recommend it as like a read. So it's a novel set in two parts. The first part focuses on a 2014 event that becomes known as the Second Immortal Dinner. And this is an evening where a renowned poet, Francis Blundy, is said to have presented his wife, Vivian, with an extended piece of poetry known as A Corona for Vivian. This prose was read one time only to this small group of friends whose lives are quite intertwined. And then the first part is you're following a century later in 2119, in a world decimated by war and climate change. So the seas have risen and England is essentially only a few islands remaining. So it's quite cool world building of like how the world looks in this future time. And you follow Tom Metcalf, who's a struggling academic who is on a quest to find this elusive poem, The Corona for Vivian. It's sort of him exploring where the lives of the past, which is us, so you can explore the history through email, social media, and the digital footprint. So it's quite interesting to see, like, an academic searching through, like, ephemera that's, like, our daily life.
Yeah.
So I quite like that
that's cool.
Take on it. And he begins to piece together the lives of the attendees and the supposed events of the night of the poem's recital, but you don't know what's happened to the poem. And the second part of the novel is telling the true story of what happened during this event. So it's back in 2014. and you're following. I won't say who the narrator is. It's kind of a spoiler. Okay. But yeah.
That's curious to have the narrator as a spoiler.
It's, yeah, I don't know if it would be, but I'll just keep it a secret anyway. I feel like kind of fun not to know who you're diving into for the second part.
Do you get to read the poem or...?
I'm not going to say.
Oh, okay. Very mysterious.
Yeah, the second part's really good. There's lots of, I found the narrative twisted and turns in lots of really exciting and interesting ways. And I don't want to say much more because I think it's fun to discover that on your own.
Sounds really curious. Yeah, I'm really curious to read it. I mean, he must be such a well-equipped writer by now.
Yeah, he's a really, well, you know, it's, I'm sure
books.
Many people know he's very well-established and that's for a reason. I did struggle a bit with the first half, the main character, Tom, I found is a bit overextended and a bit navel-gazy, but I think that's the point of the character as well. Like, but yeah, I thought it was a really brilliant meditation on how we treat history and like how we glorify certain eras and idolise their people. Yeah, and it exposes the absurdity of that longing, like, I found it interesting through the eyes of a narrator who's marvelling at our present day, which we find, which just feels unremarkable. Although I say that, it does feel quite remarkable at the moment. There's a lot happening.
There is very, very a lot. Yeah. Very, very a lot.
But yeah, it's a really, I really enjoyed it. I didn't blow me away, but like I think it's a really thoughtful meditation on, yeah, the way we treat history and, it's a bit of a sort of treasure hunt. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Recommend.
Going to read that one, which we have at the Athenaeum Library.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I read a book this week called On the Calculation of Volume by Sol. I'm not going to be able to pronounce her name. She's a Swedish writer, Solveig Bally. So this is part of a septology, which I had never heard of this word before. So it's part of 6 books that she's planned to write. I think she's written 5. And obviously they're translated as well. So written in Swedish. This book won, the first 3 books won the Nordic Council Literature Prize. And this one that I'm going to talk about what was shortlisted for the International Booker Prize perhaps last year, I think.
I think it was last year.
Yeah.
Was it this year? This year, I think.
It was this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she was first published in 1984, and she's got several novels, and she's got an art theory book and a memoir and some short prose. So, yeah, she studied philosophy as well, which makes a lot of sense for this book. So it's almost like a novella-sized book. So it's set in France, and the main protagonist is a woman called Tara Salter, and she lives in a small village with her partner, and they run a small business selling antiquarian books. So he does the sort of postage and listing side of things, and she does the traveling to find the books because she's got a special skill at knowing which books have something unique about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so one morning she's on a work trip in Paris and she wakes up and just feels like something's off, and then she goes down to the restaurant to have breakfast and she sees the same person drop the same piece of bread that she saw the day before and is like, hang on a minute, I've seen this exactly. And then it dawns on her that it's the same day, it's the 18th of November again, and she's trapped in it. And so the book is kind of, I mean, we all think, I think, Groundhog Day, right?
Yeah, like yeah, that was
repetition.
My
tradition. But this is a very much more thoughtful Groundhog Day approach. She doesn't go and do some wild stuff. She just goes back to her house. And, yeah, it's a really interesting meditation on what makes up a person's life in a day. She describes, I don't think this is giving it away, like there's a period in which she's just hanging out in the spare bedroom of her house and just hearing her partner go about his day and all the noises that he makes, and she calls it his pattern. And there's a lot of conversation, I mean, why it's to do with the weather. she's gauging the day because she knows exactly when the rain is going to start and stop, when the clouds clear. And so, yeah, it's constantly woven throughout the book as this observation of, like, the weather. At one point, yeah, she spends a lot of time outside looking at the moon and the clouds. And I mean, it sounds like it would be kind of a naff, boring read, but it's actually really beautifully written. So I'm going to read out a little quote from it that I thought was really cool. Maybe we are a weather system, condensation and evaporation. We are together. We look at one another. We touch one another. We condense. We come together. We make love. We fall asleep. We wake and revert to our strange bond. Quiet weather system with no natural disasters. Or a weather system which, until the 18th of November, saw no disasters. That's her talking about her relationship with her partner. So yeah. It's really beautiful. So there's no chapters, and it's just so she's keeping a notation on, like, how many days have passed. So it's just, like, you know, day 100 and something and la la la. So it goes on through that. So, yeah, it's kind of curious. I am interested in reading the next one to see how she can keep this idea afloat. And I feel like I don't really need to know why she's repeating this day, that there's something else going on at play here. I also wanted to read this out because I thought it was really beautiful. Because at one point she sort of feels like she's a monster, which I thought was really cool. Says, you can sit on a step in the darkness and observe it, or you can stand on the grass and be a very tiny monster in an immense space. I can feel the sky lifting the monster cape from my shoulders. I become smaller and the little pieces of the world that I have to work with dwindle to almost nothing. The heavens are vast and untouchable. The universe opens up and you become an insignificant little monster taking tiny bits out of a gigantic world.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, so it's so beautiful. I do recommend it, actually. Now that I talk about it, it's called, yeah, On the Calculation of Volume by Solveig Bay. So I'll spell it out. I don't know how you pronounce Swedish names. It's Solveig is her first name, and then Bale is Balle.
That sounds so good. I've been very intrigued by this one.
Yeah.
I think I've read a lot of very different reviews. So I'm like, but that, your reviews really, that sounds exactly like my kind of book.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah. And it's published by Faber, which I'm always quite interested to see what they publish as well. Like, books that aren't just sort of entertainment, but kind of get you questioning, life.
And a septology, that's a lot of books.
Yeah, to set out.
I don't know if I've ever, well, apart from, like, fantasy.
Yeah, it's quite
bizarre. That's a really cool undertaking.
So she must have had it all planned out. But yeah, they are quite slim volumes. So it doesn't feel arduous to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm definitely going to read that one then. Cool. My second book is, I've picked ones that have got really dramatic, like the world has ended, weather events. I was like, the ones, yeah.
Picking up on the vibe of the.
The other ones I've read that have, like, got slightly less doom and gloom ones I've already talked about. Like, one that came to my mind is Evenings and Weekends by Sheen McKenna, which is like the heat wave in London.
Ah, yeah.
But I've already talked about it on here, so you can go back and listen to that one if you really want to know. So this book is The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin. This is a book that I have been told and been meaning to read for years. Like, this is a sci-fi fantasy. It does sort of merge the two genres, and it's a classic. So this is the first in a trilogy called the Broken Earth Trilogy, and this first novel came out in 2015, and the series, each consecutive book, won the Hugo Award 3 years in a row, which is, like, a very huge achievement for an author. And I haven't read the next two in the series yet, but I can definitely see why this one won the Hugo. This is definitely lived up to the hype to me, and there was quite a lot of hype for people being like, this is my favourite fantasy book I've ever read. So I was like, oh yeah, we'll see how it goes. But no, it's really good. Yeah.
Cool.
So the fifth season, it takes place on a continent known as the Stillness, which is quite ironically named given the instability of its geology and tectonics. And the world this world would have fallen to pieces many times over if not for the orogenies, which is a group of people with the powers to manipulate earth energies and shape the land. And in reality, though, the stillness has already gone through multiple apocalyptic events called seasons, each one characterized by a specific end of the world effects. This is the norm for this world, but the orogenies do what they can to make it better by preventing many earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, that sort of thing. So even though they're like the saviours of humanity, the orogenies are feared, shunned and subjected to hostility and violent treatment. And their powers are very unpredictable and there's a genetic predisposition for it. So children that are discovered with the trait are sort of taken from their homes for training.
The name,
I think it's, I'm saying it right. Orogenous. Yeah.
But like it's orogenous, right?
It's like O-R-O-G-E-N-E.
Ah.
Yeah. Okay. I think I'm saying, I don't read it, me, I didn't I'm listen to the audiobooks. write in if I'm saying it wrong. I love this book. I can't wait to read the rest of the series. Her world building is outstanding, like some of the best I've read in this genre. I was expecting this book, I always with the start of a fantasy series come into expecting it to be a bit slower paced because they do have to do so much world building. But the way N.K. Jemisin does it is she just kind of dumps you in it, which I think for some people, I'll give you a warning, like if you're finding the first bit of the book difficult, push through because it gets really, you'll get caught up in the story and you'll kind of understand it. But
is it like she's making up? Like I always find these sorts of books, if it's like you having to learn like almost a new language.
Yeah, it is like
it is about
a
like
full
that.
World. There's like a fully realized magic system, which is kind of geology based, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, sort of I like when fantasy authors don't handhold you. They're kind of like, this is the world. I trust that you.
That you're intelligent.
That you're intelligent enough to sort of understand it.
I love when readers do that.
Yeah.
And they actually, yeah.
It's like a lot of just sort of trusting the reader to be able to understand it or to have that space to like, I don't understand it right now, but I'm taking everything in. And then eventually it will like, I'll be like, ah, yes, I see what you're trying to do. So if you do find it a bit dense and difficult in the beginning, I would encourage you to push through. It's not going to be for everyone, but I think it's definitely worth reading. And so she uses three immersive plot lines and then really expertly converges them all into a single thread by the end of the book. And I just love this book. All the characters are so amazing and it's like such an excellent like book of representation. So the three protagonists and then there's all the supporting characters. Really unique and beautiful and interesting. Mm. And she's also really, really good at writing an evil, like a baddie. Like you feel like they're awful. This is also, it's a really dark book, so just be prepared for that. Might have got that from the themes, but like, yeah, it's a hard read. But
You said it was quite a thick book as well, did you?
It's quite...
like a chunky book.
It's quite chunky. It's not like... there's definitely chunkier fantasy books. It's not enough that I'd be like, I don't think you'd look at it and be like, that's really scary. But it's quite a long novel.
A world to get lost into.
I highly recommend it. There is also some, there's a point of view that she writes in, which is difficult. And I can't remember what it's called. I wrote it down somewhere.
Omniscient.
Hold on, it's coming.
One moment, please. I've never really read
much fantasy,
but the book I talked about has actually been classified as like sci-fi as well.
Okay, yeah, I can kind of see that. Like,
yeah, but
I guess
then I don't know if I'd find this book if I was. I personally. I don't navigate towards sci-fi fantasy books. So if it was put in that section.
Mm, I feel like contemporary literary fiction would be the best place for it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of books that have, there's a lot of books in that genre that can also have like elements of magical realism in them, but they're still, yeah.
Like crime kind of does that too, depending on who's written it. It's like it's fiction, but it's,
yeah,
it's crime. So you did
second person narration.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Really worth all that time. Thanks for sticking with me.
And so what's an example of that?
I don't have one written down. You'll have to read the book and find out. It's like the narrator speaking. So,
saying, I saw this and...
Yeah.
But you're not in their head.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're kind of an unreliable narrator. That's when they can be an unreliable narrator.
Yeah, there's a quote I've got here. So it's... this is the narration. So there passes a time of happiness in your life, which I will not describe to you. It is unimportant. Perhaps you think it wrong that I dwell so much on the horrors, the pain. But pain is what shapes us after all. We are creatures born of heat and pressure and grinding, ceaseless movement. To be still is to be not alive. But what is important is that you know it was not all terrible. There was peace in long stretches between each crisis, a chance to cool and solidify before the grind resumed. Mm. Yeah.
Cool.
Highly recommend.
They do say, yeah, when it's that point of, like, when it's the narration, the second, that it is, like, you're trusting them that what they're telling you is true. But it might not be.
Yeah, you never know.
Be betrayed.
Cool. So, yeah, highly recommend that one if you like fantasy sci-fi. Even if you don't, it has a lot of really important things to say about our society now, about, yeah,
cool,
as well.
A book that makes you work for it. And I love that with writers keeping in mind that their readers are intelligent and don't need everything spout out.
Yeah, which I think is a real problem with a lot of fiction today.
Yeah, it's like entertainment. It's just watching a like trashy film.
I think it has its place, but I also think there's a lot of people that read now that if a book is... will not read because if it's like a minute part, like difficult to sort of take in, people are like, oh, this can't do it. I'm like, no, you've got to.
Yeah. I mean, I had elements of this in the calculation of volume book, but it was so easy to go to the next stage. You're kind of drawn through the book because of the way she didn't put it into chapters.
Mm.
And then it's just in little segments. Well, I guess they're in days, yeah.
Yeah.
But some of those days are just like a paragraph. Yeah. Mm. So it's a busy month for events. And
big month for
ye old
readers and writers in Dunedin.
It's like the readers and writers on, is it this? God, I always get the date wrong. It's the 17th, 18th, 19th.
Yeah.
And Landfill is having their 250th. Edition celebration on the 16th, I think, of October. And then we've got a few things coming up in the Athenaeum as well. On the 28th of October, as part of the Southern Heritage Festival, Tom Riley is going to be giving a presentation similar to if anyone went to the 155th anniversary celebration we had earlier in the year in May. He gave a wonderful presentation then, and it was so cool. It had slides.
It was very great.
Love a slideshow of Dunedin and what it looked like in the 1870s. Highly recommend coming along for that. There'll be more details to come. So that's 28th of October, which is a Tuesday evening. And then on the 19th of November, the master students of Otago University, which is myself included, are having a end of year reading, which will be open to the public. And then on the 20th of December, which is actually, oh no, maybe it's November. Sorry, it is. 20th of
December. Like, why am I talking about
December? 20th of November, the NZSA Reading Saloon is happening at the Athenaeum. There's a bunch of writers coming to talk at that, and it's going to be presented by Susan Wardle. So that should be really interesting, and all welcome to come along to that. Of course, if you're interested in joining the Athenaeum Library, you can look us up online, send me an email. We welcome members at any time, and it's a really cool library, and I usually buy books. If you're like, can you please buy this, then I usually do. We've got a great little collection, and yeah, Bella can vouch for that.
Yeah.
Join us.
Join us.
Cool. Cool. I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, ka kite.
Books Uncovered. Exciting conversations about books and literary events. Brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.